Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Mitt Weber. S&P futures down 25 cents. It's 25 cents. Futures down 17. NASDAQ futures up 16. So far, a very slow morning. We'll see if that hangs in there. Brandon, how are you?
I'm doing well this morning, Chief. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I guess good time to be a Sox fan. They're only getting better, eh?
That's right. Looking pretty good right now. They do have a tough stretch coming up. They've got a lot of games against teams that are above 500 the rest of the way. That's going to make or break their season. I think they're pretty well a lock for the playoffs at this point, given their division. But it is pretty good. And now they're getting back Robert. They just got Robert back. They got Eloy Jimenez back. Looking pretty good right now.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, they're just pushing for the best record, so they don't have to play in the wild card round, right?
That's right.
Isn't that the deal? You don't have to.
And I think that they'll be able to do that. I think that they'll be able to do that, but they have to hold together. You know, I was one of the people who was a little bit unnerved or disturbed by the fact that they brought back Tony La Russa, but so far it seems like he's doing good. Certainly the guys at ESPN, if you've got the support of A-Rod, you know you're doing something right. Isn't that true?
I guess. they are announcers, but they're also ambassadors to the game. You're not going to get a Howard Cosell or Harry Carey ever again that actually says the truth. They'll never be hired.
Like it is.
I tell it like it is.
The thing about telling it like it is one approach to take. But I mean, some of the things that A-Rod says are just stupid.
Well, I've never in this world I've never seen a guy able to reinvent himself so dramatically.
Reinvent himself.
Yeah.
After all of his steroid abuses.
Yeah, it was. Actually, there's a list, and I could dig it up here. I should have prepared myself. I was going to bring it up. The list of people with 3,000 hits that aren't in the Hall of Fame. And it's a pretty interesting list. I mean, you're topped off by Pete Rose. And you've got A-Rod. You've got Rafael Palmeiro. You've got a bunch of guys on there. Well, I think Shoeless Joe didn't have 3,000, did he? I don't think, but there's a couple.
I don't think he had 3,000 hits because he was banned from baseball after the 1919 World Series. I don't think he ever made it to 3,000 hits.
But it was an interesting list.
You know, it's really good. It's really interesting. You mentioned Pete Rose to start that list, and right now the Cubs are putting a sports betting or about to put a sports betting venue just outside Wrigley Field. How does that comport with keeping Pete Rose out of the Hall of Fame right now?
I'm gonna be the attorney here, and because my attorney just asked a really dumb question, like I would normally ask of him, and it's all we've evolved. How's that?
Well, that's not a dumb question. It's one showing the hypocrisy of baseball. Now, by the way, I happen to believe that Pete Rose should not be in the Hall of Fame because of his gambling activities, but I'm just saying that this is kind of evolution is one thing, and we'll give a lot of credit to Charles Darwin here. But the idea that baseball and sports are moving towards allowing sports betting does not
allowing
Pete Rose out of the Hall of Fame.
Allowing the smoking hat blend who's out there every night telling you it's the third inning, you can still get a bet down. That's more than allowing.
Yes.
By the way, Shoeless Joe Jackson, even though he was a career .356 hitter,
which is just outstanding. He finished with 1,772 hits. So he played technically 13 seasons, but his first three seasons, he only played a total of 30 games. And then he also had two other seasons where he played a very small number of games. So he really only played about eight, you know, full seasons. And over 1,700 hits and a .356 career batting average.
What, see, who would you, I'm going to see if I can find that list, but it's, but I don't know, what's the big hang-up against Palmeiro? I mean,
He also was implicated in steroids.
Yeah, but he was implicated. But I mean, there's a lot of people who are implicated.
Yeah. Well, so is Sosa, and people don't. They haven't welcomed him back either.
Well, so what's gonna happen with all this? I mean, I guess I'm asking a question nobody knows the answer. But it seems
we may have evolved, but I don't think we've evolved to the steroids approval or acknowledgement as much as we have betting. The evolution is still in process.
Well, let's put it this way: in my business. The you would never have, if the broker was a knothead of any kind, or even wasn't, and they come after him anyway, and the people all the way up the chain on the failure to supervise, all that other kind of crap, is every place just as important. So how exactly is Tony La Russa in the Hall of Fame? When all those guys that were roided up to the nines, when he was the manager.
I would agree.
I can't answer that question. I mean, it's certainly inconceivable to me that the managers and the coaching staff did not know about Jose Canseco and Mark McGwire and other players on the Rockdale Palmeiros. I mean, it's inconceivable to me that they didn't know that. Just like it's inconceivable if they were denying that they knew that there were greenies being popped, you know, back in the day among their team when they were, you know, apparently like M&Ms in a bowl in the clubhouse before and after games. There's no plausible deniability to coin a phrase.
Well, I mean, I don't even, you know, the amazing part when I used to have breakfast with Doug Buffon all the time, the late Doug Buffon, by the way, and he would talk about them giving them drugs out like candy in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's absolutely startling, and yet, you know, maybe all those guys will, you know, I mean, half of them, well, Doug died with a severe disease, right? Whatever that, what they call it, it's a disease, Manny? I always forget the name of it.
Well, he had dementia, I don't know.
Well, what's the one, they sent his brain out and it came back with the, what's
CTE?
The yeah. Oh, yeah. See, I'm, you know, boy, I'm getting a little better at this computer thing. You know, they got these computers now. Let's see. Pete Rose, 4,256 hits. Derek Jeter, 3,465, but he's not eligible yet, but he will be in. Albert Pujols, Adrian Beltre.
Still active.
Yeah, still active. A-Rod, Ichiro still unavailable. Rafael Palmeiro. So those are the guys. But, so I mean, I don't. It's going to reach the point here where you wonder what these guys now, you know, starting from this.
Well, of that list, I think the only one who's guaranteed not to get in is Rafael Palmeiro. I think that with the way that A-Rod has reinvented himself and gotten back into the good grace of baseball as a sycophantic broadcaster, he will get in when he's eligible. Palmeiro just never had the panache to get back in the good graces of baseball. So I think he's, and the other guys are not eligible yet.
But well, Pete Rose is
going to join guys like Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds because he doesn't, especially in his case, it's going to be harder because he didn't have the reputation of in the outstanding career numbers overall that a Clemens or a Barry Bonds did.
Okay, now what is it? I'm still sort of, I still don't know where we're going to go with that. But we all have opinions, but I just, this stuff sort of sticks. You know, the thing that's it's kind of a carry-on conversation from yesterday, Brendan, I don't know if you were listening to it, is we're talking about, what's his name? Pudge, the catcher. It seems to me that this, I know that the war is the big thing now and everything, but it seems to me, and Maddie and I, actually, we don't even argue about it because we both kind of, We wonder how much going from team to team hurts you in any of your, whenever you try and do anything. And it's not just baseball, because, I mean, you could probably say that Wilbur Marshall was easily one of the top five linebackers of his era, but because he went from team to team, he's probably got no chance to Hall of Fame. Yet there isn't anybody that wouldn't draft a guy number one today. Would they, Matty? I mean, he's got to be, he's not listed in any top 100 lists. He's not listed in anything. Yet anybody in football would say that guy was awful good. I mean, right? I mean,
sure.
Yeah. A lot of this has to do with just the publicity and the panache. I mean, Paul Merrill was here, then he went to Texas. Nobody from Texas. That's where Pudge toiled. And how was the Texas team totally off the radar? I mean, they've always been pretty good too. But name me 10 stars from Texas, and I'm sure they've had them. You know, it's not like they're Boston.
Nolan Ryan.
For a while, but he started with the Mets, so they followed him around, right? I'm saying it really has to do. I mean, if Ichiro wasn't that spectacular, playing in Seattle, being Asian, would anybody even care about the guy? And how many people even know about him? I mean, they're never on national TV. They're hardly ever on national TV. They had a crummy team for a while, so they were never on a game. Nobody ever wants to do a game in a week at 9 o'clock at night. You know, or anything like that. You do wonder, I mean, how many, well, you look at, what was the old, I don't want to give away the thing, but, there's only been six people, Brendan, six sports figures, I won't say people, that have been on the cover of Business Week, Newsweek, and Time in the same week. And I don't think you could name them. I bet you could name a few. I named a few. But the two individuals that were on there just happened to be from New York. Reggie Jackson and Joe Namath, right? So right. You weren't going to get Ernie Banks on there. You weren't going to get, you know, LeBron.
Or Andre Dawson.
Or Andre Dawson. I mean, you're not
MVP on a bad team for the Cubs.
Yeah, you're not going to get that. A lot of it has to do with where you are. It's not just real estate. Location, 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 they say, you know. Can you name the other four?
Well, I think it's true. I mean, if you take a ball player who's not in either Los Angeles or New York, or arguably Boston, you're not very likely to be on the cover of all the magazines in the same week, and you're not going to get a lot of credit.
I even think, though, in this era of national TV, which we think would be the great equalizer, I mean, it's not how many Boston New York games are on national TV every year? 100?
Well, exactly. If you listen to the guys at ESPN, you almost think that there are only two teams in baseball, New York and Boston.
I mean, you really never see, well, I won't say never, unless it's a Sunday where they start earlier, you don't see a national TV game being the Dodgers and the Giants, and clearly that's one of the marquee matchups in the last time, however many years. I mean, how many times is that a national?
They made the mistake of leaving New York.
True. Well, Matty, what would you guess?
You'll see Dodgers Giants a lot, but it's late at night.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if you're just a regular baseball guy watching it on TV, you have to really look for, unless it's, you'll see them on Sunday night, though, because then they start out there at like 4, they start in the afternoon, and they're always bitching about the sun in everybody's eyes, right? But, I mean, it's not the same. You're not going to see that much a Seattle whatever game out there. I mean, you just
don't. They're going to put teams on that people actually watch, which is like 5.
But
Yankees, Mets.
Well, yeah, but it's also
Red Sox. It's Cubs.
Also
it's Dodgers.
A self-fulfilling prophecy. If you keep showing Yankees and Boston Red Sox games, people are going to follow the Yankees and the Boston Red Sox. You're not going to follow the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Right. Except I think Matty is usually onto something. And he is this time. I'm going to say, I'll turn around what you said. I'm going to say that because in order for them to get on the right time, you're not getting the local markets in prime time. So it probably hurts you out there. I mean, if you put the Dodgers on at 4 in the afternoon, it's not prime time, or because it would be 4 in the afternoon, right, if it's 7 o'clock in New York.
Yep.
If you put them on at 4 in the afternoon, you're probably losing your prime time audience in the two cities where the ball teams are, which is probably not what you want to do.
No.
So it's probably not a New York problem that they don't want to watch the Dodgers. It's probably more an L.A. problem. They don't want to watch them at 4 in the afternoon.
It's definitely an odd time.
Yeah, it's an odd time. I don't know how that's going to we're going. What do you guys?
Well, I think there, and there are two things with that. I mean, first, it's an odd time overall, but second, it's an unusual time in the rotation of how many games would start at 4 o'clock in the regular scheme. I mean, think about when the Cubs had their 3 o'clock games on a Friday afternoon. That got ingrained so that people would leave work and go to Wrigley Field. But it's unusual. And, you know, the fans got into a routine of a 1:15 game in the afternoon or a 7 o'clock game at night. 4 o'clock is breaking that pattern of behavior, so they've got to give you something completely different.
Brendan, even you were young once. Can you even imagine a young Brendan, Mitty? I don't know. So. I'm going to say that I don't know when I've had a nicer time, a wilder time, 50 times in a row than those 3:05 games. I mean, we'd leave the floor, we'd head up there. Maybe in those days before they gave Ricketts, you know, the street, Murphy's Bleachers, they would just expand and take over the whole corner, and the police would just shut it down.
Yep.
I mean, there was no, nobody cared because it was like four nights a year.
They went, the 3:05 Friday games were awesome, and then they went away, and then they came back, and then Joe Maddon made them disappear for good.
Why?
Because he said, I want my guys programmed to start at two times, 1 o'clock or 7 o'clock. I don't want 3 o'clock. I don't want noon. They used to do noon Saturday. They do 3 o'clock Friday, noon Saturday, 1 o'clock Sunday, and then the other games would be either 1 o'clock or 7 o'clock. And he goes, we got four different start times. I want guys having a routine. It's either a 1 o'clock routine or a 7 o'clock routine when we're at home. And they got rid of them. And they got rid of the noon Saturday, got rid of the 3 o'clock Friday.
Well, when your upper deck was closed before, and you opened it up and had 30,000 people there, I don't think Joe's vote would have counted.
Well, not then, no.
And I'm going to say the fun we had, every young person in town was there. Every good-looking girl was there.
The 3 o'clock Friday games were the best.
Yeah.
They were awesome.
Yeah, they were.
I mean, you can only imagine.
It was a great way to end the work week, too. You know, you reward, like, summer in the city of Chicago on a Friday afternoon, you close the office early, you head up to Wrigley Field, you have a good time. And you still got the rest of the night to do whatever you want to do.
Well, the one guy that couldn't make it, his job was to take everybody's trading jackets up to the office. The guys that were in there would just either hop a cab or run right outside the Cebo, hop the L, and you were up there. You made it by the second inning. You were good to go. Run down to your seats. Uh-huh. Had your beer in your hand, everybody's happy. You didn't have to go to lunch, you had a hot dog, good to go. And I mean, those are good times. And you didn't worry about getting shot. You could hang out in the street without worrying about, you know, getting arrested. It was good times. So, Brendan, what's your feel on the state of the recovery here? I'm a little nervous because, of course, I got this blinder view of the world by being downtown here. The places that have opened after, you know, not or being closed forever, like the really nice place out here on the plaza, and Friday night they didn't have a soul there. Series opened Wednesday, they had a decent crowd Wednesday, they had a big crowd Friday. They get a huge before club crowd on Friday. It's not their normal crowd. We stopped by last night, met some people there. I think there were 10 people in the place. I mean, it's just, there's still not late trains, there's still not people in the habit of, if they are coming downtown, of staying here afterward. It's we're a ways away, and I think we're a ways away. I don't.
I think we are too, and I think that the real wild card is the development of the Delta virus, the unvaccinated population, and the spike in cases that are still happening, and the fear that there'll be more variants coming out because of the number of people who are unvaccinated. I think there's still a reluctance to go back to a normal economy, to go to the theater, to go to the sports events. They are filling the stadiums. I know about that, but I think there's still a reluctance to do a lot of things in big crowds.
What? When are we going to get? I think people don't trust the government to say go ahead and open and close them 2 days later.
Well, I think that's a big fear, and I think a lot of the governments at both the state and the federal level, not to mention the local levels, are trying to play this game that it has a weird effect, that the reason that people don't trust the government is because they keep shifting what they're telling, and they're trying to tell people what they want to hear, even if it's inconsistent with what they've said before in trying to tamp down the virus. And instead of having a consistent message, I think that it is almost like, we've done this for a year and a half, it's time to go back to normal. But we really can't go back to normal, because if we go back to normal, we're going to have another spike, and it's going to be really dangerous for folks. And people don't want to hear that. And they, people want to go back to normal activities, normal crowds, and are kind of denying that the Delta virus exists or can be troublesome. And so it's an interesting conundrum for the government officials, and it makes them seem like they're either wishy-washy or inconsistent because they're unknowledgeable. Very interesting phenomenon, but I think that the government officials have put themselves in a box, and it's become highly political. I mean, take Ron DeSantis for the stand he's taken in Florida, the anti-vaccination stand. But interestingly, I saw a post that his children go to a private school whose administration has mandated masks for all the kids in the school. So even though he's adamant about no masks in the school at the state level, his kids are wearing masks to school. And you contrast that with Asa Hutchinson of Arkansas, who said, I made a mistake, and we should reverse the law that says no school district can impose a mask mandate. It's not just on the Democrats in Washington or at the CDC or at local levels. It's they're conflicting opinions even on the Republican side, too.
Well, I think, I honestly believe, Brennan, that the this particular Delta virus is down to a stage of where people dying and so forth, that it's reaching a bad flu. And at some point, you're just, I mean, there's a, I don't think that we are capable. Well, the thing that kind of frosts me, I was just reading, I was telling Maddie on the way in, having somebody who had it last October, and had the antibody test and had the antibodies, all right. It struck me from day one that there's a really messed up deal here, because they're trying to hit everybody up with these vaccinations, and which, you know, I have no problem with, because I think it's helped a lot. And by the way, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but at all. But the idea that as people got this thing more and more and more, and there were some early tests that said 11 times more people actually had it than were printed up. And it turns out the antibodies work fine for the people that have had it. There's never been any sort of let people use their own head. If they already had it, they should be able to do whatever they damn well please and not have to wear a mask and not have to go anywhere. And I'm looking at this thing now. Yesterday, since I got my first shot, even though I had it 8 months ago, the COVID. And so I just said, okay, I'm going to Google, when should you be vaccinated after you get, if you've already had the disease? And a bunch of people come flying out saying, the day you're, you know, that you're able to go back to work, you owe it to everybody else to go out and get a vaccine and blah, blah, blah. So here I am, I dig around, so I see this one article and I pull it up. National Institute of Health, January 26, 2021. Lasting immunity found after recovery from COVID-19. This is 8 months after they started doing this. The people who had it aren't any danger to themselves or anybody. They have a stronger immunity than if you have the vaccine. Now, after a period of time, they think that if you get the vaccine on top of it, you're probably better off. But there's no reason that these people were not going to work, that they weren't going to a ball game. I mean, it's absolutely incredible that they think after that it becomes a T-cell immunity, and it's stored in your bone marrow where years from now your body's going to remember it, and you may not be immune to it, but it'll be easier on you. Why does everybody, and then I had three of the people that I talked to, that I read the doctor saying, you got to go get it right away. The study only was 500 people. We don't trust it. I mean, there's got to be something here, because this is the same, I read the same thing from coming out of Britain, that out of 8 or 10 months, as they were following everybody all along, said you're every bit as good, if not better, if you actually had the disease, unless you're compromised, unless you have AIDS or something, and you don't actually get the antibodies. You're just as well off as you had the vaccine. You'll never hear that told by anybody anywhere, Brennan, because that's not the policy. The policy is the day after, you know, you get out, they take you out of quarantine, you get this vaccine. And yet, you don't need it, and it might actually hurt. Why? I mean, what are we doing here? Why can't we just tell people the truth and say, knock yourself out? I mean, right now, I honestly believe that everybody that I care about that hasn't had it should go get the vaccine. But I also know that they're going to get it for themselves, not for other people like a year ago. Because you can still get it, you can still spread it, and why can't we tell people? In Singapore...
I disagree with that.
Why?
Because we pay for it.
What do you mean we pay for it?
If you know just as well as I do, the vaccine prevents you from dying in the hospital. If you don't get it, the vaccine, and you go to the hospital and you're stuck there for a month, who pays for it?
I just said it was a good idea
for
everybody.
You said it's a good idea for them, not everyone else. No, it's a good idea for everyone else because we pay for it.
It's a good idea for you to get the flu shot. Would you want them to mandate you do?
I don't care. If I was going in the hospital from the flu, which I'm not, then whatever. But well, my point is,
how many people do you think do? It's 100 some thousand a year.
Yeah, elderly people, and we pay for them. I'm talking about regular people in their 30s and 40s that are ignorantly not getting this, and then they go to the hospital, and we have to pay for it.
Do you have any idea the road you're heading down?
I'm not heading down any road.
Yeah, you are.
No, I'm correcting you on is one thing, where you said you get the vaccine for yourself, not for everyone else.
Okay.
I'm disagreeing hard with that because we pay for them.
Okay. You also pay for people that are overweight.
There's also another price here, Chief, that when you go to the hospital, you're taking a bed that can be used for somebody with a heart attack or other illness, because when hospitals fill up with COVID patients, even though they may not be dying, even though the treatment is different than it was a year ago, they're taking up beds and resources for people who need it for other reasons. Elective surgeries are put on hold or denied. So I think there's an expanding effect on what happens with COVID in hospitals.
Brennan, there's a study out of Singapore that I will send to you. I think I already did, actually. They're up to 75-80% of the people vaccinated, soon to be 90 or 95, like in the next month or two. Everybody's getting the Delta variant.
We know that. We've known all along that the vaccine doesn't prevent you from getting it. It prevents you from dying from it.
Okay.
And having to go to the hospital in 97% of the cases.
What I'm saying is...
All I'm correcting you on, I agree with you. I'm 99% with you on this. I think we agree more than you think we do. What I'm saying is when you say you're only getting it for yourself, not for everyone else, that is wrong. That is incorrect. Because if you go to the hospital for a month because you were too stupid enough to get a free vaccine, and I have to pay thousands of dollars
I was narrow. I was saying you're only getting it for yourself in terms of spreading it around to other people.
Okay, that's fair, because I agree with you on that.
But now the road you're on is nobody should be able to smoke, nobody should be able to drink, nobody should be fat. I mean, when you get on, oh, no, God, you're 20 pounds overweight, your insurance doesn't work. I mean, that's the road you're on.
I think people should be able to do whatever they want, but when we're talking about a pandemic, then there's a clear solution, and yet people are just choosing not to do it because of, I don't know, some political reason that makes no sense, and we all have to pay for it, then I have a problem with that.
All right, what I'm saying is, at this point with the vaccination, and it's a half a solution. It's not the whole solution. This obviously doesn't stop
you. Well, there clearly isn't a whole solution yet.
Well, no, there isn't.
But this one puts you, so you don't go to the hospital and you don't die. That sounds like a pretty good solution for now.
Well, that's where we are with flus and cold and a bunch of other stuff.
You don't die from the flu or cold unless you're like 90 years old.
I think you're wrong on that. I think 120,000 people die every year from the cold or flu.
Exactly, and they're all 70 or older, I bet.
I think most of them
are. Or compromised.
Anyway.
It's not the people I'm reading about that are 35 years old that are refusing to get the vaccine, and now they're getting the Delta variant and ending up in the hospital.
What I'm saying is we're very close to the stage where you tell the truth to everybody, and they take it upon themselves.
I'm with you on that, 100%.
Brennan, I don't know where you are.
I think that there is another issue here about telling the truth. And one of the things that I see in the evolution of the last year and a half or 2 years is how do you define the truth? And one of the things that's being pointed at when you look at information coming out of the CDC or out of Fauci and other government officials, there's no room for an evolution of knowledge. We know more about the Delta variant now, and we know more about COVID now than we did 18 months ago. And yet, there's when information changes, when direction changes from the CDC or from Fauci, it's seen with a very negative connotation that you're changing your mind. There's a difference between changing your mind to be arbitrary and because you learn more information about the spread or the effect of the disease, whether it's COVID itself or whether it is a Delta variant or a yet-to-be identified variant. And I think without having either, if you want to use the word trust, or without an understanding that evolution of knowledge means that directions change. I mean, go back to March of 2020 when they said don't use masking.
Brendan, we're gonna have to carry you on later in the week because we're gonna have to gotta go get to Joel here. But I agree with you. But those guys have been lying since day one. So why do you trust them? S&P futures up a quarter, and NASDAQ futures up 16. Yeah, it didn't come out of Wuhan, did it? Yeah, it did. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alley. Just Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 25 cents. Looks like it's going to be maybe an August day here today. It certainly is hot and humid enough in Chicago. But then again, that's Maddie's job. We do traffic, weather, sports. S&P futures, again, up 50 cents. NASDAQ futures up 15. We got the Dow is up, actually is down 15. I'm looking down the Dow list here. I see Goldman Sachs up a buck. That's pretty much it on anything that's moving here this morning in that area. They moved my Europe spot here, Manny. DAX up 35.2%, FTSE down 40 cents. I guess we gotta call that one flat. CAC round up 10.1%, so very snoozy over there. Aren't they off, like, officially off just about everywhere this first couple of weeks? Is that the first couple of weeks in August or the last couple of weeks, Manny?
The holiday? It's like right now. It's like, middle August, if not all of August.
Why don't we do that?
Because we don't do that.
Nikkei up 68 points, 0.2%. Shanghai up 35, that's a full 1%. Hang Seng up 322, 1.2%. So Shanghai is getting close to making up the 5% they lost a few weeks ago. They've been nudging back up. Not shooting back up, but kind of nudging that way. We've got bonds. 10-year is 1.32, so it moved up some yesterday. Bund minus 0.46, that moved up a little bit too. It was lower than minus 0.50. Japan is a positive 0.02. We've got oil up up $1.35. It's probably bouncing back up 2%. But still, 67.82 was like in the maybe 73-ish a couple of weeks ago, so it's trying to come back. Brent up $1.10, 70.15. Natural gas unchanged at 405. RBOB up 2 cents to 226. And gold up 430. It hasn't been up in a while. It's 1730. Silver up 12 cents, 23.39. Copper up 3 cents, 432. And we've got our favorite crypto down 783, but 45,387. The rebound is really in there, and everybody's, because it's going up, everybody says to buy it. Maddie, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. One crash in the area so far here on a Tuesday morning. That's on the Jane Addams I-90 outbound side just before the Devon Toll Plaza. This crash is blocking the two right lanes and causing heavy congestion on outbound I-90, so keep that in mind if you're heading out to the northwestern suburbs. No issues on the inbound side. Edens and Kennedy looking good. Same for the Eisenhower. Traffic building on the Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Southside expressways are looking good as well. Weather today, some clouds early, more rain in the forecast, including some heavy thunderstorms like yesterday. We'll also be hot and steamy in between the rain with a high of 91. Right now it's mostly cloudy and 76 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast down there as well. Rainy and a high of 98 today. Right now it is drizzling and 74 degrees down in Phoenix. In sports, White Sox, no problems with the Twins last night. They blew out Minnesota 11-1. Cubs were postponed due to last night's weather. They'll play a split doubleheader today with a 1:20 game at Wrigley. Then they'll clear the ballpark and then play a night game at 7:05. Lastly, Diamondbacks were off last night. They're back in action this evening to take on the Giants in San Francisco. That's a 6:45 Arizona time first pitch. Chief.
Joel, you with us?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing?
All right. Hey, real quick question for both of you sports team. What do you suppose it's like in the Cubs and Giants clubhouse? I mean, if you're on a crummy team in softball, at least you go try and you head for the bar afterward, which is the real reason why you went out anyway. What do you suppose, those, I mean, what are those guys? Is every man for himself or what?
I'll let Maddie tackle that one first.
Well, I think you're talking about the Cubs and the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah,
sorry.
And
yeah, okay. Yeah, you threw me a curveball there with the Giants.
Yeah, I'm the sorry. Giants are good. Yeah. They're in first place, and they're enjoying life, and they added Chris Bryant.
One of those West Coast teams.
If you're the Diamondbacks, you've been bad all year, and you kind of knew you were bad going into the season, and so it kind of is what it is. You're on your way to one of the worst records in baseball history, actually. The Cubs, they were in first place 6 weeks ago and 11 games over 500, and then they fell apart, and then they traded everyone, and so now I think they're shell-shocked, but if you're one of the young guys that's getting an opportunity to play, you're liking it.
You are if you're showing good.
Basically, there's only two guys that, there's Contreras and, I guess Hendricks maybe, that really feel like they're all their buddies are gone, that were past, they were a big part of the past era. None of these other guys were a part of the past era, so I don't even think they care. I think they're excited to play.
Well, probably. But, I mean, you also don't want to go out and strike out 17 times a night where everybody says that's why those guys weren't in the major leagues.
Well, you want an opportunity. Now, yeah. You either take it or you don't. Ortega and Wisdom have been taking advantage of it. The rest of the guys, not so much.
I think it's hard to hit when the next guy is going to strike. I don't think you get anything if you're any good. But I don't think Wisdom gets a ball.
You want my cynical view?
Sure.
They're getting paid.
True.
I think Joel's right. They're getting paid good money, and they're getting an opportunity to play in the big leagues. They're loving it.
Oh, you and I would do it in a second. I mean, for God's sake. What are the guys saying in Major League? One more year in the sun? I mean, Tom Berenger? I get to spend one more year in the sun?
I mean, I mean, come on, these guys. I mean, if they're a free agent coming up or they want to get traded, they're trying. If they're in the midst of a 2-3 year deal, then... You know, how hard are they going to try? I mean, that's just my very cynical outlook here on this Tuesday morning.
I just think it's hard to show good on a team of stumble bumps, because I don't think if you are good, you're ever going to get a pitch. I'm just saying.
You know, Chief, I mean, how interested, are people really in baseball right now? You know?
That's a good question.
I mean, football's the king. Baseball's been on the wane for years. The only people that really listen to baseball and follow baseball is old people, right? Because they remember listening to it on the radio. So I think, football just so much overshadows these other sports. I don't know. I mean,
well, speaking of which,
interest in baseball.
Speaking of which, what do you think last year not being able to go to games and stuff has done to the college and pro football? I mean, come back without a hitch, where it just doesn't matter. It'll be the Notre Dame games, the Michigan games will be jammed like it never happened.
Funny you ask that, Chief. Guess he's taking a pass on the home opener.
You.
Oh, wow.
Yep. It's, Labor Day weekend, Western Michigan, coinciding with the Jewish holidays starting on Monday. And I don't want to sit outside for 4 hours with a mask on, and that's what I would probably do. So, especially if it's 85 degrees out. So,
yep.
I just, for me, personally, my passion for Michigan sports and athletics and stuff. I'm gonna give Lisa a break. Now, since 1984, she's been putting up with me on Michigan football Saturdays and Saturday nights, and I just. This year, and probably also has to do with the way the direction of the team's been, but no, I was having this consideration afterwards. I mean, I'm keeping my, my four tickets, and I'm thinking about the Washington game. It's a night game in a big house, but I don't know. We'll see if they get 100,000 in there. They, if they start out bad, that streak's going to be snapped for sure.
Well, the NBC told the Irish to pound sand on their first game with Toledo. It's only going to be streaming. But what do you think?
That's the way sports is going, Chief.
Yep.
That's the way sports is going. You're going to be able to sit on your couch with your Oculus goggles, and you're going to have 50-yard line seats for $5. I wouldn't want to own a franchise, a major stadium, for all the money in the world.
Well, you'd like to own one so you could sell one right now. Anyway, are we just going to have a snoozer of an August here? It sure seems to me like a lot of news is percolating here, and markets kind of, unless you're into these individual
stuff. August, Chief. Supposedly no one is working in Europe, right?
Yep.
In August. And, it's been a rough year and a half. Kids are supposedly going back to school in a couple of weeks. People are packing up, taking the vacations, going out to the Hamptons, whatever they do. Very, very tight ranges. Consolidating your all-time high. So if you traded that move in the past, your portfolio's not doing very well. Very, very tight ranges. Even Friday after the jobs number yesterday. So, yeah, the dog days of August. Maybe we'll perk up, get a Labor Day rally.
Boy, a lot of clients in some of the places that I do stuff with, they really got used to the 25% last year, and they're wondering what's going on this year. Hey, what about my stocks?
It's a slow grind. I mean, the jobs number shook people up a little bit on the interest rate front, but that's good for the banks. Chief, there's just so much rotation in this market that we just never go down. I mean, I don't want to say that, of course. We'll go down a couple thousand points when I say that. But, they're pulling money out of one sector. They're putting it in another sector. It's just this constant rotation, growth to value, value to biotech. I mean, there's just an insatiable bid in this market, and it just rotates around. So that's why you're not getting these steep declines.
Well, there's so much money around. We've even had to invent stocks and call them bitcoins. We trade artificial stocks. They go up, they go up, they go up.
Yeah, bitcoins had a nice bounce. So technically, coming back half of that move from the, 65K region down under 30. And, people aren't even though interest rates are going up, people aren't using gold as a hedge. They're using bitcoin against potential inflation. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious.
We'll see how... I wonder how that's all going to work out. Joel, thank you very much, buddy.
Okay.
I'm not going to Notre Dame Toledo either. I'm with you. I'm out on that one. S&P futures unchanged, and as if he was up 13, be right back, Mr. Kenny Pulcheri.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks Radio Show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Look at them yo-yos. That's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks are free. Now that ain't working.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures unchanged. Unchanged. That's a rarity. As that futures up 15, I've got at AMC with earnings last night, and they're up 269 trading 36.49. So, but other than that, I've got Goldman Sachs up a buck. I've got, Amgen up 70 cents, and they were down a bunch last week on their earnings. CVX up 60 cents, but it's a snoozer so far this morning. Hey, Kenny, how are you, bud?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. It's a hot and humid here, but other than that, it's, of course, it's always hot and humid where you are.
You know what? It hasn't actually been that humid. It's been hot for sure, but it actually hasn't been that humid, although I suspect, you know, in the next 6 weeks or so, late August and September, I guess it gets really bad, but July wasn't that bad. It was actually beautiful that winter.
Well, you guys, in the season, it's been a real long time before there's even a hint of a storm. Is it?
Don't say it. We're already halfway through August, and we haven't gotten anything, you know, considering the season starts in June, right? Now, typically, it's September and October that suddenly rears its ugly head, but let's see. You know, at the moment, the skies are blue and sunny, and it's another gorgeous day outside.
Well, if you get a certain weather pattern where there's some wind shear from the north, it just chops all those guys apart, doesn't it? I mean, you can go the whole season without hardly anything sometimes, can't you?
I can do what?
They can go a whole season with hardly any real named hurricanes, can't they?
Yeah. I mean, last year we had just the one, right? That happened in September, but it didn't even hit us. But I'll tell you, the only thing we had in July, kind of late July, was, you know, it rained every single day. Not all day, but, you know, it does that down here. Like, you know, all of a sudden it'll rain for 15 minutes, and then it'll cool everything off, and then it'll be fine again. But it did it every single day for almost the whole month of July.
Well, isn't that why Miami decided they wanted a roof stadium, because it rained every afternoon when they're starting the game? Or
yeah,
something?
Yeah.
Well, what do you make of the state of the numbers on Friday? The labor numbers were about as good as you can get, and it actually had a few people re-entering the labor force. Not a lot, but some, which is unusual these days. And
the numbers on Friday, they were hotter than expected, but they weren't so hot that it created initial panic. But I think what it's doing is it is absolutely creating a sense that, you know, we are getting to that place that Jay Powell keeps telling everyone we're not there yet. But I think, you know, I think investors in the market are starting to say, no, I think we're there, or I think we're getting very close to there. And I think that's why you see, you know, the market is, although we're still at the highs and it's not really stumbling, you can feel that it's a little bit tired, that it's trying to figure out what the next step is. And this morning or last night, you had Eric Rosengren, who's Boston Fed president, come out, the most aggressive voice in the whole committee, who's saying that he thinks the tapering should start in September and that they should announce it at Jackson Hole. Now, the other three or four Fed members that have also come out in favor have been a little bit more relaxed, and they're saying, well, maybe, you know, we should think about it in December or January, but Eric Rosengren is right out there saying, September, here we go. So it's going to be interesting. Futures aren't really reacting to that comment yet. I think they're waiting for tomorrow's CPI, PPI data, tomorrow and Thursday. Because remember, last month, both those numbers surprised us big, significantly to the upside. I think if we get another one of those again tomorrow and Thursday, then I think it's going to be very difficult for Jay Powell to sit there and go, you know, move on, nothing to see here, everything's transitory. I don't think, even if he says that, I don't think the market's going to believe it.
I'll go one step further. A lot of people are in the man's either controlled or he's a blithering idiot.
I think for a lot of times they thought he was very much in control, although I have to tell you, I think that's going to change if he continues to tell everybody we don't know what we're talking about and prices are only transitory and all this that we see happening around us is just imaginary. I think then people are going to start to think he's a blithering idiot.
I don't. I mean, somebody's doing well by this. And I'm going to ask you a question you probably don't want to answer, Kenny. when you do news on TV, which you actually are very good at, by the way, somehow along the line you fall into this: is it news or is it ratings? And I don't know exactly when why is it that people just in terms of the way you say stuff, and I'm not accusing you of this. When you start talking about what a great thing it is that all these firms have increased their margin, and you got the chairman on the TV, and a guy like Cramer, which I shouldn't say his name, is on there, and all they're doing is gushing because they made all this money because they increased their margin. Why don't they just say, we raised prices? Because it has a totally different connotation, but to you and me, that's exactly what happened. I mean, do they think we're collectively that stupid that don't realize that increased margin means you raise the prices?
Listen, I hear you, and I will say, we've actually seen that in the consumer sector, staple sector. You've seen it from Church & Dwight. You've seen it from Colgate. You've seen it from Procter & Gamble. They have actually come out and said, we are raising prices. At Church & Dwight, they're ready to raise prices again in 2022. That's the third time, right? They've raised them twice already in 2021, and they've already said they're going to raise them again in 2022. And so that sector seems to have no problem saying it, partly because consumer staple stuff is stuff you can't argue with. You need soap. You need detergent. You need toothpaste. You need shampoo. So they can raise the prices and, you know, tell you to bend over, but you're going to still buy it, right?
Well, I hope so. I hope people are still buying soap.
Yeah, well, but, you know, it's the other ones that are being very coy. Even Coca-Cola's come out and said that they're raising prices. And look, the other thing that I love is when they don't tell you they're raising prices, but they make the container that you buy a little bit smaller, or they put, like, in the bottom of the Skippy, on the bottom of the Skippy peanut butter, they put this dimple like you have in a wine bottle, so now it just, there's less room in that jar for peanut butter, so therefore the jar itself looks the same, but yet there's less in it, right?
Well, when the Kenny's grandkids grow up, you're going to have a tough time telling them that a pound isn't really 14 or 15 ounces.
You're right. It's the
7-Eleven near me, when they came out, they went back to the paper cups. And
yeah,
the first one, the old ones used to say 16 ounces, and the new ones
didn't
say anything. So I say to the guy, the guy's, you know, it's like watching The Simpsons. I say to the guy, I'll bet these aren't 16 ounces. Oh, no, they're 16 ounces. I said, I'll bet you $5. I said, against a cup of coffee, that these things aren't 16 ounces. Oh, no, I don't bet. I don't gamble. I go, no, you don't gamble, because you don't. Sure enough, I went home, filled up my measuring cup to 15 ounces, and poured it in, and it flew right over the top. But it just, the extra large is no longer 16. It's like 15 or 14 and a half or something.
Agreed. And so, you know, to answer your question, I think why don't they come out and say it? Because that you're absolutely right. It's a different connotation when they say they're raising prices versus saying that margins expanded, right? And a lot of people don't put that together, right? They hear margins expanded. They're, oh, wow, they're very efficient. When, in fact, all they did was raise prices.
Well, you can't go, at least here, I mean, I wander between the white collar and blue collar groups, right, Kenny? And you can't get a conversation going about the economy where somebody doesn't outpeep something about the people who are lazy, getting their unemployment, sitting on the sofa. I mean, it's going to be, we managed to get that one in everybody's head. And yet, I can't imagine what it would take, even on a used car now, which are like doubled here. To the point where, I mean, I can't even, what, a basic pickup truck is like 45 grand now? And it was 12?
Yeah,
it was
a 12. Basic. And that's a basic pickup truck.
It was what? You could get one for like 15, 10 years ago. I mean, how do you expect, all the tolls are up? We have not raised the prices of the CTA and the trains because nobody's on them. But, I don't see how, just the cost involved in going back to work, and they think somebody's going to do that for $10 an hour? I mean, really? My guys that do my, you know, work in the neighborhood, I'm friendly, of course, with all of them. And these are the guys that do, you know, if you want your kitchen remodeled on the sly, they'll do it, that type of thing. They can't find guys that want to work for less than $25 an hour. I mean, they don't work all year. They're like, if you expect me to have a car, get there, I can't do it for less than $200 a day. I mean, what are you doing with 10? You know, if I go to lunch, it takes me an hour and a half of my pay for lunch if I'm making $10 an hour. I mean, we've blown so far past even thinking about it, Kenny. How do you come back from that? I mean, there's got to be a method to the madness. Are we trying to inflate our way out of our debt, or what are we doing?
I think they're not going to have a choice. I don't think that the truth is, I don't think they have much of a choice. I think that's exactly what's going to happen, right? How else are they going to get out of it?
Well, one of these days, they're going to get a couple of schmucks like you and me. You're not a schmuck, maybe I. And they're going to come on national TV and say, the only reason why the stock market's up 25% is because the value of the dollar is down 25%.
Right. Correct.
I mean, someplace somewhere that light bulb is going to go off. I don't know if Milton Friedman's got to pull it and come out of the grave and clone himself or something. I don't know, but somehow, some way, with all these big time economists we have, why isn't anybody saying that, or anybody who's saying it isn't being heard?
Right.
Right.
Well, you know, they're not being heard right now, but they will be because it's gonna become very evident.
What's your feel on these? The where do you think, Kenny? And we only have a minute here. Where is the impetus? Where's the money behind these stocks that run up like, you know, 40% in one day? Is it just nothing for sale? That there's no, if they want to buy it, it just runs up? Or is it because it's not the New York Stock Exchange with this amount offered at this amount offered at that price, that there's nothing in the way? I mean, how does something like Robinhood go up that much a week and a half after, when nobody seemed to care about it day one, all of a sudden a thing like doubles?
Well, part of that is, I think, just the chatter that goes on. I think a lot of that is the chatter that goes on in a lot of those rooms. But I also think in this automated environment, what people need to understand is that, you know, you can, the logic that runs a lot of the automated programs, when you can put an order in there to buy 100,000 or sell 100,000 Robinhood, but you just want to be a percentage of the volume. So even though you get 100,000 for sale and you'd be willing to sell them, If the volume's not trading away from you, if there's not equal volume trading away from you, then you're not gonna offer the stock. So if there's only 500 offered, you're only gonna offer 500. You're not gonna offer 10,000 because the way the logic is in the program is you only want to be a percentage of the volume that trades. So if you put the percentages at 30%, so if a thousand shares trades, you only want to sell 300 shares, right? So it's gonna go to where the volume on the book is located. So unless there's three other sellers out there with significant amount of stock for sale at a price, it's never going to sit at a price. Unlike a human being, I would have gone out to a stock if the customer had said to me, you know, when we used to trade in the crowd verbally, the customer would say, listen, sell these, I want to sell them, don't let the stock rise until you sell the stock. I'd sit there and just offer and offer and offer until either I sold the stock or the stock traded away from me and he didn't care. But that's what you do. Today in this electronic environment, because of the way the logic works, that no one ever stands in a place, which is why you see these drastic moves up and these drastic moves down. Because the logic also knows it can see, it reads the incoming order flow, so it sees the buy orders that are coming in through the system, the automated generated buy orders, and what does the algorithm do? Automatically it just pulls back. The same way on the way down, right? When the sell orders come in, the buyers pull back, which is why you see these voids in prices and why you see the market swing all over the place. And that's what people need to understand, because I agree with you. It's stupid when you see the stocks trade the way they do.
Kenny, next Tuesday, can we put on the wall, can we get the long version of that? Because I don't think anybody knows, and I'm incredibly interested in what you just said. Can we get the long version of that next Tuesday?
Yeah, but that's the way the algorithms work today, right? Because I'm like a human being that will stand there and make a decision. The algorithm will do as it's programmed. So if you put in a percentage of volume order, you only want to be a percentage of the volume that trades. You don't want to sit there at any one price, bid for it or offer it.
Okay,
you
but you're
no. I only want to be a percentage of what trades.
Right,
so you're never going to be the one who makes the decision. You are going to be the follower. You're going to wait for someone else to offer stock at a price, and then you'll match that. If no one's there, you're going to go to the price where there's somebody else at. Which is why you get these swings.
Kenny, this is one of those situations where you're talking about something you know a lot about. There isn't anybody who knows what you're talking about. And it's fascinating. So let's talk about it next week. By the way, if you take the Series 65 tomorrow, there's no such thing as a percentage back-off order. But obviously there is.
What? Yeah, they're called POVs, right? Percentage of volume. That's all you have to worry. They're built into every trading system out there.
Well, we're looking forward to Professor Polcari next Tuesday.
Goodbye.
S&P futures up a quarter, NASDAQ futures up 18. Maddie, I'm embarrassed. I didn't know people did that. No. I never have.
You learn something every day.
Learn something every day. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Low and up-based stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Matt Weber. On the board, S&P futures up 25 cents. We've been right about the flat line. It's almost like I'd go play golf if I were you, Matt, before it starts raining.
That sounds pretty good today, although it's going to be very hot and steamy and a lot of thunderstorms.
Got to go early, bud.
Yeah.
Got to go early and hit them. And by the way, the straighter you hit them, the less time it takes.
That's true.
It's not only is it less frustrating, it's quicker. Jeff, how are you?
I'm good, Chief. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Hanging in there. I wish it was, like last week, temperature-wise, but it isn't. So we'll just have to deal with it. It is Chicago, right?
Yeah, it's a muggy day today. Going to have to look at a lot of people's legs.
Yeah.
A lot of shorts out there on the trees.
Well, there's some you might want to look, and some they maybe should have worn long pants. just saying. You get some of that. So what's up with the magazine? You were gonna regale us with the new issue, and we might as well let's start there. What do you guys study? Are you looking for topics? We come up with a few. I mean, you're not running out of topics.
Well,
I don't think you ever will do that.
We never run out. In fact, we keep on stacking them up. You know, we just did our thinking in bets issue, which was really about risk sizing, bet sizing, really. I mean, you identify a bet or an investment or a trade that you want to make. The next question is how much? How much are you banking? So lots of academic work on that, practical work, everyone from, you know, professional poker players to traders have systems that we refer to, and that's the current issue out. That's available at getluckbox.com. But now we're working on a cryptocurrency issue that goes a little bit deeper into things like NFTs and taking a hard look at the third generation cryptocurrencies after Bitcoin being the first generation and Ethereum being the second, looking at Cardano and the other so-called currencies in the third phase that focus more on scalability and interoperability and even the environmental considerations. You know, Bitcoin is extremely, it requires an extraordinary amount of energy consumption to mine Bitcoin when compared to that, exceeding that of third world countries, and all that is true. And the new generation of cryptocurrencies is taking that into effect. And looking at all this against the current backdrop of what is likely to be some increased regulatory attention. So that's what we're looking at now. That's what we're focused on. Had an interesting chat with Charles Hoskinson, who is he's going to be one of the future interviews. He's the founder of Ethereum and now the founder of Cardano. And he was talking about the evolution of the cryptocurrency market. So that's where our attentions are.
All right. I have three questions that pop right into my head. The conclusion of your last issue, with the people doing all the studies and the trading and the game theory. How much different is it than the original game theory research of 40, 50 years ago? I mean, what were the conclusions? I mean, there was a lot of work being
really
done.
That's a great question. Tversky, T-V-E-R-S-K-Y, and Kahneman, Daniel Kahneman, are the two that did a lot of work on prospect theory, loss theory, and all those principles are still pretty much intact. There's new formulas and algorithms that speak to bet sizing, and the Kelly criterion, which isn't new, goes back to the 30s, developed that was with IBM, has still some significance, both for horse, for bettors or for traders. So whether you're, betting on horses or you're playing poker, you use a Kelly criterion assumptions on bet sizing. It's kind of factoring expected value into the size of your bankroll. It's something that Warren Buffett's alluded to many times in terms of something he uses to determine his allocations in the Berkshire portfolio. So there's new things that are, algorithms on bet sizing, but some of the basics of prospect theory and loss theory and risk aversion theory are still relevant and have not been challenged.
What do they say about the people? There was some people when I was in school that had done some studies about people's risk-reward curve being skewed to the right. In other words, if and I remember some of this, so you tell me where I'm wrong. If you make a bet, you'd like the chances of you winning to at least be 50%. I mean, obviously you don't get that, but you'd love it. But people are willing to take less than that. In other words, if you play craps, say it's 50%, if you pay the pass line, people love to play craps, but they want something that gives them a pretty fair number. And what's the number? Like 49.5. I mean, you get the thing, so you could actually streak and do okay. But if you're gonna do the lottery, you need the big. So you're willing to do something where the return might be way less than 50%. If you do win, you make a real lot more money than you started. So what that would mean is you're mathematically, that would say your risk reward curve is skewed to the right. Correct? Where does that start? I mean, when does that start? I mean, when you even in a Vegas casino, you'll see that craps, because it just pays one for one, basically. I mean, obviously, bet the numbers are different, but it's all on the handle, it's all on the excitement, it's all on enjoying the game. But clearly, if you're going to sit there and play, what's the one where you pick the stupid numbers, where the girls walk around the bathing suits and even hit you up at the pool? And that one has to have a prize in it for like 20 grand if you win. Otherwise, you're not going to give her $2. Well, if she's, I guess I would say you're not going to give her $2 in the hope she walks back with $4. I guess if it's the right girl, you would. But by and large, you wouldn't. Right, Jeff? I mean, I forget the name. I pronounced it. Keno.
It's true. It starts with the loss aversion theory. It's that people, given the equal value of a dollar loss versus a dollar gain, people have more aversion to losing a dollar than they have pleasure from gaining a dollar. And that is the basis of most irrational behavior when it comes to bet sizing, either in gambling or trading, that if you're down a dollar, it might start triggering your irrational thinking, like doubling up to catch up. Well, I'll bet another dollar. Now I'm down two. Then I'll bet $2. Now I'm down four. Then I'll bet $4. And one of the reasons why you need the Kelly criterion is to tell you how much to keep your bet so you don't run into that kind of potential. But loss aversion triggers most of the bad decisions, because even though the value of winning a dollar is the mere opposite of losing a dollar, people put much greater emphasis on the loss and less value on the win. So if you're up a dollar, you're far more likely to not treat that as seriously as if you're losing a dollar. But in both instances, they result in kind of reaction, irresponsible reactants. If you're up a dollar on a 50-50 play, it makes it very easy to choose to double up and then lose a bet. So it's funny, most irrational behavior begins right at the first wager, and studies consistently show that. I think one of the, to get to your question, one of the interesting questions that we use is an old question for, assessing risk and behavior, cognitive sciences on behavioral betting situations. And that is, here's a question we'll ask you. Let's say you receive a guaranteed payment of $10, or you can enter a lottery with a 50% chance of either winning $24 and a 50% chance of winning nothing. What would you choose? A guaranteed payment of $10 or a 50-50 chance of winning $24 or
zero? I could complicate that and say over what time and what's the interest rate, but I won't. I would probably say that the $10.
The math would say to take the 50-50 chance on winning the $24 because the expected value of that decision is $12.
Right? Absolutely.
50, which is greater than 10. But you asked the right question over how many periods of times. If it's a one-off, taking the $10 is a better utility play because it's a bird in the hand. It's guaranteed money. If you were given 10 chances at that play, you take the $12, the $24 option or the lottery option all day long, because over time, you should get that $12 versus the $10. But if it's a one-off, and it's an interesting thing. We asked the readers that question, and it was right down the middle. It was 50-50. And it recognizes that it's an incomplete question, as you said, instinctively. You said, well, over how much time? Because that's really the key question. So it's things like that that we analyzed in the latest Luck Box, and it was a lot of fun. You learned a lot about people. Annie Duke was our feature interview, and she's of course not only she won the World Series of Poker in 2004, but she took up poker as a hobby. Her first love is cognitive sciences and risk assessment. In fact, she's teaching at Wharton right now at the University of Pennsylvania. So she's back to being an academic and writing books about it. And she wrote a book, Thinking in Bets, which is the same title of our issue. So it's a good book. It's a great book.
Well, that's why when I ducked back...
A gambler or investor should pick it up.
I was cheating a little on you, Jeff, because what I did was I ducked back into the theory of whether you want to do an investment or not. All right? Because there's two ways of deciding. If you have an interest rate that you can raise capital, there's two ways of looking at an investment going forward, a project, say. They would say, because the difference is they would say the project is, if you can go out and borrow at 6% and your project returns 9%, you definitely want to do it. Okay, but if you're, probably. Now, but if you have a net, if you choose that project, but if you compare it to one that has a net present value of, say, 12%, you might say, well, I'll choose the 12 over the 9. But the assumption is if the 9% project is a 10-year project and the net present value one that pays more is only 5 years, the assumption in the formula is at the end of 5 years you can then reinvest it at 12%, which you may not be able to do. So you might end up rather taking the 9% over 10 years than the 12% over 5. Because you don't know what's going to happen at the end of 5. So like whenever you ask a question like that, I'm always like, wait a minute, I'm not getting enough detail, but clearly is what you brought up, and I foolishly said, or not foolishly, but maybe said without thinking, if you're going to get the 10 now versus the 12 at the end of the year, the question is, what can you do with the 10 now? If you can make 50% on it, you want it now. If you can only make 40 cents on it or nothing in the bank,
a utility consideration.
So, if you want now, the way the banks are, you want a year from now.
Exercises are all about is looking at all the elements that go into decision making on bet sizing. Right? It's a lot more than how much am I betting.
But it goes into trading as well. And one of the questions that I talk about or investing, I mean, you don't see as much of it now. Maybe because the generation's. People's portfolio are a hell of a lot different than they were 15, 20 years ago. When people come in to you, a lot of people now have had, the money manager, big cap Bob, mid cap Mike, and they got this vast array of, crap in there. that they don't even know what to have, you know. So, but yeah. which is you know what I'm not saying that's been successful for a while at passive investing. So I'm not, but 15, 20 years ago, you a lot out of 10 people that came in, inevitably you've had one or two that had, I'll use the term legacy stock, where Jeff would walk in and he'd say, "Geez, I got 15,000 shares of Exxon or something," and I go, "Wow, where the hell did you get that?" Well, you know, Jeff Senior left it to me. He worked for Exxon or something like that. And I'm sitting there going, okay, well, you have what we, as you know, you have what we call a concentration issue, which if Exxon does better than the rest of the market, it's a good thing. If it doesn't, it's a bad thing, right? So we need to find a way either to protect the Exxon if you want, or we need to somehow lighten up on it and get something else if you don't think Exxon's going to outperform. So it's a big, long project, and whether or not you stick with it just because you have it, you know, so it's, a lot of people say, well, I can't sell it. Well, why not? Well, it's my dad's stock. Well, your dad's dead. He might want to sell it. He might not even like the company. I mean, you gotta be careful when you say stuff like that. But by and large, the question I always get to, Jeff, is, okay, Jeff, you came in, you want me to help you out, you like my firm, blah, blah, blah. Let me ask you this. If you didn't have any accent, and I gave you $2.5 million, would you say immediately get on your little machine over there and buy me $2.5 million worth of Exxon? The answer inevitably is, well, bleep no. I said, okay, well, that's what you got. And you're saying you wouldn't create it today. Now, I know there's some tax ramifications and all that other kind of stuff. But if you, I mean, basically, I'll say one thing that absolutely is true, Jeff. If I had a dime for every time somebody didn't do the proper trade to save on taxes, I'd be the richest man around. I mean, because people, and I know taxes exist and they're a consideration, but, you know, people who only do their trading, through their tax implications, generally, I think, screw up. Just saying. But,
right.
But I mean, there's a lot of considerations. I mean, you're right. That's why I used to love gambling so much, Jeff, because it is such a people thing, and you see what people do and how they make decisions. And how,
you know, there used to be such a reluctance. It's interesting. There's an old reluctance to equate, but in people in the finance and trading industry, were always reluctant to equate gambling and trading in any way. They thought it said poorly on the industry. In fact, I remember famously when I was the publisher of a prior magazine called Modern Trader, that the Chicago Mercantile Exchange actually stopped advertising. They used to run full paid ads with us every issue. And once we did a gambling issue, they stopped running ads with us because they said it is our policy not to be anywhere near any references to gambling. And it's so myopic and short-sighted. Like, people don't, you know, can't sit and see that there's academic underpinnings that relate to both of them, and that the process of bet sizing, you know, if you're purely a, you know, gambler, speculator, throwing money in the air, that's one thing. But you know, we profile professional gamblers who make, you know, 7, 8, 9 figures a year, like Billy Walters, you know, a very famous gambler, because they're professional gamblers. And there's a lot to learn from them. But the industry always was a little uptight about those comparisons.
Well, you're
nice to see them.
Even if you do the things that you think you should do in quote investing. Investing is not gambling. How many times you got to, you know, hear that, especially if you're taking your 65
exactly.
test or something.
Right.
But I always go back to the Pullman example, which I probably shouldn't do. The reason why I will this time though is Pullman. I knew people that were the fourth generation at Pullman, Jeff, and I knew. And at the time, Pullman was the oldest company in New York Stock Exchange. It was never in the Dow or anything, but it was the oldest company in New York Stock Exchange. And so you could say, you know, I guess maybe in 1905, you could say, I'm working here, I'm buying Pullman stock, we're making money, that's the way I invest. And a lot of people did that, okay? And a lot of people did very well doing that. I mean, if you worked at AT&T and you bought shares at AT&T. But you also, from a gambler standpoint, that's the dumbest thing you ever want to do. Why the hell would you put your job and your investment in the same basket? Or the day you lose your job is the day you lose your investment. You know, think of the people at Bear Stearns. Bear Stearns had a very aggressive 401k plan where they matched, but they matched with their own stock or did something. So people's in their 401k plan, most of their higher guys was this, I don't know exactly, but it was a significant percentage of Bear Stearns stock. So the day you lost your job, you lost your 401k almost. And oh, by the way, you might have lived in a neighborhood where 50 of people work for Bear Stearns. Now there's 50 houses for sale. I mean, it gets, from an investment standpoint, that's really stupid. But from an investment standpoint, I mean, from a gambling standpoint, that's really stupid. From an investment standpoint, you say, what do you mean? I'm investing in what I love. I'm investing. I see this place. I see us making money every year. I see us growing. We're hiring new guys. The new guys are smart. Why wouldn't I want to invest here? Well, you wouldn't, because you're there, and the two things are too intertwined. And oh, by the way, your retirement's there too, you idiot. But by the same token, you wouldn't call somebody an idiot when they were doing it and they're growing. So you, even though you're investing knowledge, I think was what you're trying to say, the gambling part is how is the place you're investing in. All these random things happen outside of Pullman. Somebody buys them and closes them. Bear Stearns, all of a sudden something blows up. I mean, those events are random, and you never get out of those events. I mean, even Procter & Gamble, it sells soap to people, has crap happening outside of them that they can't control. So that part is going to be a gamble, despite what the SEC says, right?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Because you don't know, you know, you may think that the oil companies, God, what better place to put your money for the last, ever since when did they discover oil? You know, way before Jed Clampett. All of a sudden, one day, maybe every car is electric, and you go, wait a minute, that was a great business, wasn't it? Duh. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen, at least not anytime soon, but, I mean, there's always random events outside of you, correct?
That's right, and, you know, I think we better get our arms around gambling. I mean, in the same, we also took a different look at that sector, because we made parallels between the cannabis industry and the gambling industry as states have, as cannabis sales have rolled out across the country as a result of state-level decisions. That same thing is happening now with legalized gambling. So it's a hot investment sector. There's been lots of acquisitions of gambling media companies as of late, and more states obviously need the revenues. Look at even Illinois. You see, you know, us making moves in that direction too. And it'll soon be across 50 states legalized gambling at the state level. Right now, New Jersey is just cleaning up. There are 26 gambling companies that are based in New Jersey that are professional sports books, and they are really they're really benefiting. In fact, they took over to Las Vegas as having the highest sports betting handle for the first time in this past year. So New Jersey, and as other states open up, you'll start to see that spread out a little bit. But it's become a very important investment sector, both the media that's associated with gambling. So these are, think of like CNBC, what they do for stocks is now media that does the same thing for gambling. They're basically have their analysts all day talking about betting spreads and the companies that are, or the sports teams that are competing against each other and handicapping those events, all with an eye towards encouraging, you know, betting activity, because that's usually the rev share or the affiliate revenue that's associated with those gambling media companies. So we took a look at that sector too, and, you know, how investors can kind of get their arms around that, what companies look good to invest in.
Jeff,
but
do you
that
think
will be it'll be a big deal. You know, the Cubs are wrestling with it right now. It looks like we're going to have a sports book right over Wrigley State, right at Wrigley, you know. So,
Jeff, do you think at the end of the day, this is all a game in a lot of places, and the rationale is always that if we don't do it, the other state's doing this, and they're stealing our money. You know, and first of all, I don't mind tipping a glass. I've never been a marijuana guy, really ever, and I like to gamble. All right, I don't do sports gambling and stuff. If I was in Vegas, I would. If I was sitting there watching a game, I don't have any problem with it. I just don't have the instinct right now to turn on the Cubs and immediately hit my smartphone and put a bet down. I mean, I just don't. But if I got into it, you know, I don't know. But at the end of the day, if you just concentrated on your own people, I mean, I know if we're going to have more gambling in Illinois, you're going to get some, you know, buffoon, be it Pritzker or somebody else, doesn't matter who it is, they're going to act like a buffoon, and they're going to get up there and say, well, we really have to do it because if not, people are going to, you know, gamble in New Jersey, like you just said. At the end of the day, do you think it's a net negative or positive on your population? And I, as much as I like to gamble, I'm going to say I think it's a negative. It's, it ends up being a massive tax, and I think at the end of the day, it's a negative. Now, I'm not saying we should go back to prohibition or stuff, but this...
Sure. You know, well, it's an interesting question, because, you know, as a libertarian, I welcome government doing less in terms of telling me what I can and cannot do. I'd rather make that decision myself, so that's always guided my thinking. It's one of the reasons I've always been in favor of the legalization of drugs, including narcotics. Let people make their own decisions there. But at the same time, I know it's not in the public interest. I don't believe for a second it is. You know, listen, it maybe it's good for revenue, but now weed is so pervasive in high schools as a result of legalization in Illinois, just because anybody can get it. Kids have fake IDs. They're buying it all the time. I've got a couple of high school students. They will tell me that. And it's just not a, it's not a great thing, you know, but hey, look, either is half the programming on television, or either is, you know, there's so many things that are poor things. You add another thing to the list. I really don't think government needs to be the arbitrator of what's good for me or my family. So as much as I know it doesn't benefit the public interest, aside from the tax revenue, I still think that those are the, prices you pay for freedom and liberty, is to be able to make your own decisions.
You see,
if you're asking me, is it a good thing? I'd say no. Is it the right thing? I'd say yes.
I'm going to say I used to think like you, and maybe a good chunk of me still does. But the more I see it, the way it plays out, it's one thing to say everybody should be able to drink. When you see somebody totally drunk in a gutter, you sit there, is that positive or negative? Again, I'm not going back to prohibition, but when you start having, as soon as the taxes intervene, Jeff, then I got a real problem with it. All right, because it is a tax, and when I see somebody, a waitress at you know one of the restaurants that Audrey and I go to, you know, basically bust her fanny to do to make $150 on her way out the door, she sits down and blows 60 on the video poker going out the door. You know, part of it's her decision, but I don't like the idea that she's paying tax on the 150 and the 40 she just gave to the state in taxes, or half of the money that the slot machine gives, that she doesn't get to deduct. I mean, the fact that if you win the lottery, you gotta pay, but if you buy $10 worth of tickets every week. Now, if you're really into it, if you're Mr. Accountant, you would save those tickets, okay, and you would. That's why that was the beauty about the racetrack. If you ever had a big winner, yeah, you could walk around and pick up tickets that other people tossed away and say you bought them, right? So I mean, literally, people would do that. Many matter of fact, I did that once for somebody who did want a big thing next to my parents. He goes, "Hey, Tom, I want you to go pick me up like a couple of dollars worth of tickets," and I got okay. So I did. But I mean, but you, if you won over $600, they had a file, right? And it's, that's why people only bet $2 bets instead of betting $10. So you'd rather have $500-$300 winners than one $1,500 winner, right? So I mean, I kind of learned some of this as a young age. I don't like it when the state gets involved tax wise, where if you win you lose, and if you lose you just lose. I mean, for them it's not. It has nothing to do with you and I having the freedom to go sit down and play blackjack if we want to. That part I get. But the way these guys, I mean, the reason why they keep talking about expanding the casino in Chicago to more players, nobody wants it. They don't want it because the taxes are so damn high, they can't make any money there. I mean, the plan they put forward, I believe I'm right, Maddie, nobody wants it because the taxes are so damn high. Can't make any dough. The state like wants all the money. I mean, why don't you just have people show up, and instead of even get to play blackjack, I just give you my $500. I mean, let's just make it simple. S&P futures up 75 cents, Nasdaq futures up 20. We're a long way from game theory, but how game theory gets caught up in business, huh, Jeff? Amazing the detangled web we weave, as they say. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ali, Mr. Mayor Weber on the board. S&P futures up 75 cents now. It's a snoozer. NASDAQ futures up 20, down 16. And guess what? When I first walked in this morning and kicked up the CNBC thing on my machine, I thought of Jeff instantly. Why would that be, Manny?
I don't know.
Big headline here, Amazon complaints. Amazon's still struggling to really... For people that have complaints against their third-party, they're struggling to make those people happy. I'm going to say, bullshit! Well, I bought one thing.
I thought you were going to say Amazon's still struggling from Luckbox article.
Well, that would, I wish that was.
Yeah.
Remember the
yeah,
server?
I wish that was the case.
Remember the Apple server we bought, Manny, when we first started the show?
Yeah, I'm looking
remember
at it.
That piece of... It doesn't work, does it?
No.
Never did.
Well, I think it did work, but...
So I get it from a third-party guy on Amazon, Jeff. And of course, the thing's not working. So I call up Amazon and I call up Apple. They go, "We can't help you. What do you mean? You got to buy a service agreement." What do you mean a service agreement? I just bought the damn thing. And they go, "Oh no, that thing has been out for a year and a half. The guy must have bought it in a box at like a flea market or something and sold it to me. It was so old that Apple wouldn't even talk to me on the phone." And Amazon said, "It's not our problem." So to this day, I have not bought anything from Amazon. It was 10 years ago. To this day. That's how Irish I am. Whatever. What can I say? Can I say that politically correctly, Manny? That's how Irish I am. I don't forget.
I think you can.
Because I'm Irish, I can say it?
I would think so.
All right, well,
it would be weird if Irish people couldn't say they're Irish.
That would be weird. So I can't lie and say I'm Polish?
I mean, you can do whatever you want.
I suppose. A 10-year unchanged at 1.31. The Bund, minus 0.47. Japan, positive 0.02. Oil up 85 cents. It was up over a dollar, but it's still 1.28%, 67.33. So coming back from a big sell-off last week. Brent up 71 cents, 69.75. I'm going to say, Jeff, help me with this. Did Brent get over 76? I think it did, 77. It was pushing 80 there for a while, but now it's back under 70, but starting to move up again. Natural gas unchanged, 406. RBOB up 2 cents, 225. RBOB's been right about there between 215 and 230 really now for quite a while. We've got gold, a little bit of a rally, 480, but talk about a dead cat bounce, 1730. Long way from the 1900 it was and a long way from the 1800 it was last week. Silver up 7 cents, 2334. Copper unchanged, 429. And we've got our favorite cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, down 467, but still 45,704. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. That earlier crash on the Jane Addams is all clear, so that's good news. But we do have some traffic building steadily, especially on the Eisenhower. For whatever reason, that's our slowest moving expressway. No accidents to report at this time, but a lot of red and high traffic volumes on the Ike. So give yourself plenty of time if you're taking I-290. Same could be said for the Stevenson, especially as you approach the Dan Ryan, that exit ramp there with all the construction. A lot of delays coming in from the west on those two expressways. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford are looking good. Lakeshore Drive is quiet in both directions. Off the expressways in the city, there's a crash at Belmont and Costner, but that's the only crash in the area right now. Weather today, some sunshine early, and then we'll have more thunderstorms in the area, a high of 91 degrees today. Right now, it is mostly clear and 77 downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast and a high of 98. Right now, it's rainy and 75. In sports, White Sox, no problem with the Twins last night. They blew out Minnesota 11-1. Cubs were postponed due to the weather. They'll play a split doubleheader today, 120 game 1, 705 game 2. Diamondbacks were off last night as well. They'll take on the Giants this evening. Chief.
Jeff, I was just thinking during the break, if I could, I don't know how you could even do this, but I bet it would be it would take a while. You know, it would be, I think, kind of, now you're going to tell me I'm an idiot because I don't know anything about magazines. But you know, it would be, I think a fun issue, even if it was a secondary issue because it would be a lousy issue for most people. I'd like to see like a hypocrisy issue. I'd like to see something where if you look at all, I mean, I've been expert witness on a bunch of arbitration cases and option and commodities and everything, and it's incredible how there's this huge industry of people. Oh man, this guy, even though he was a chairman of Merrill Lynch, you know, you traded his account and he didn't know the risks, and boy oh boy, you did a covered right, and the guy didn't know what a covered right was, and you screwed him like he wants all his money back. Of course, if he made money, you know, he gets to keep it, that kind of thing. And this is going on constantly. Yet you can walk into any 7-Eleven, any gas station, and you'll see somebody buying stuff from state lotteries, and there's no disclosure of how much they pay back. There's no thing you have to sign that say, I've read all the disclosures and I understand it and I'm buying this thing anyway. And my mind goes back to the guy when I used to live at 70 West Huron, it was a Copperfields. It was like a 7-Eleven. Every Saturday I go down there, get coffee, we're heading out. I always got headed out early, and this guy'd be down there, a street guy, and he would make his 20 bucks out, you know, whatever, bumming dough from somebody, for lack of a better term. And he would buy his one quart of Coke, two Doritos, and 16 lottery tickets. Now, you know, and if the state's involved, there's no morals to it whatsoever. Yet the state wouldn't hesitate a second to find Tasty Trade or someplace or find PTI if they thought there was a trade done to a customer that didn't understand it. And yet they do it every nanosecond of every day. I mean, that's why when they start to get together with the gambling and the other stuff, I'm starting to really have a problem with it. Even though I would never have a problem with the three of us, and we'll bring Thomas, a few other people, and we'll get together and play poker for an evening, having a couple beers. I mean, am I going crazy with this, or am I just getting old?
Well, hypocrisy is really what news and media should be focused on, you know, 24/7. So yeah, there's definitely an issue there, but it's a daily issue. I mean, you know, I suppose you could look at the former president's birthday party as a pure example. Although I don't agree with that. I mean, quite frankly, he should have his birthday party, and I would never challenge anybody about that. I think that I think the hypocrisy would be looking at how the media treats the Sturgis rally and mentions nothing about Lollapalooza. And I didn't make that connection right away because, and oddly enough, a very liberal progressive friend of mine came to me and said, do you notice how there's been a lot of media attention on Sturgis? You know, basically these ignorant bikers are going down there to a super spreader event over in Sturgis, but how little of a discussion about Lollapalooza occurred on a national scale. And I said, what do you think the reason is? And he said, well, you know, Lollapalooza's in Chicago, you know, in a blue mayor in a blue state, and Sturgis isn't. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting, and it's probably true. That kind of hypocrisy is the stuff that roils me. You know?
Well, Lollapalooza required vaccinations to get in. Sturgis is not doing that. That's a difference.
I'm going to say that the easiest thing in the world.
It's a good point, but you're also on, you know, motorcycles outside and, you know, et cetera. But I agree with you. That is a good point.
How many people?
I'm still with you, by the way.
Of course, the Sturgis people
should do whatever
Barack
they want.
Obama didn't require vaccinations to get in.
I got a question for you guys. First of all, I already know of people that have the vaccine fake cards. I mean, they're much easier to make than the draft cards were. What do you think? What do you say, Jeff? You'd have to put a stamp on the back.
Well, I'll tell you why it's so easy, particularly because Lollapalooza didn't require the real card. They just asked for photocopies. So if you didn't even have to get the paper stock right. You just basically had to, you know, create a card and then take a picture of it and then print it off. They didn't take digital copies. They accepted photocopies and they did not require the actual card.
It's
an easy one to make off, but, you know.
I bought a bunch of concert tickets a couple months ago when things started to open up that are starting to come up, you know, like for September and October and at various venues around the city, at the Metro and at Lincoln Hall and at the Riv and so on and so forth, the Vic. And just this last week, I started getting emails saying you're going to have to show a vaccination card to get in, but we will accept a picture of your card on your phone as long as the name matches your ID. So they're taking digital copies now. And then there's another thing where there's apparently an app now that's allowing you to plug in your vaccination information. I don't know if you know anything about that, but I know it's around. I haven't read into it yet, but I'm going to look into that as well.
My guys were talking about the other night because one guy's going on a cruise. There's definitely an app out there that you can get.
But I like the idea of just snapping a picture of my card because that card's going to be destroyed within a week if you're carrying it around everywhere because it's loose. You know, it's too big to fit in your wallet.
So that's essentially a vaccination password. What do you think? What's your take on it?
I have a quick question for you guys regarding the media real quick where you started this out, Jeff. Is how much of it is, and I honestly, I don't know if there is an answer, but you guys are closer to it. How much of it is just people have this such narrow view, even though there's so much stuff out there, as they say in the trading floor, it's like taking a drink through a fire hydrant. You can't do it. I mean, the fact that people focus on Sturgis is because the media came up with Sturgis. If they would have said, look at this NASCAR race or dirt track race in Texas, and there's 15,000 people in there, you know, basically butt to elbow, and nobody's got a mask on, and nobody has. If that's what somebody would have come up with, I think part of it is people would just every one of the news media people would grab onto it. And we just—it's almost like total plagiarism. I mean, the reason why I say this, Jeff and Maddie, is when the police chief was caught drunk in his car at 12:30, in his SUV.
Former police chief.
Yes. And I happen to know a lot about the place he was early series. I also know it opened at 8 o'clock or closed at 8 o'clock. So the guy gets pinched at 12:30. Well, I'm sitting. Even I could go. Well, gee, there's 4.5 hours that are unaccounted for. I read the first one is in Cranes. An hour later, I get something from the Sun-Times, then the Trib, and then Washington Post. It was like people, like when we copied our Latin homework in high school. Nobody went out and interviewed anybody. Nobody did anything. It just, this is now the news. It was like the lady in Indiana years ago that was smacking her kid in the car. I looked at it and go, gee, she didn't even get a good one in. She kept hitting the car. The kid never even got smacked, or he might have gotten one. You know, that was, for anybody who's ever gotten smacked, that wasn't any kind of a smacking. And I'm like, and yet the thing went viral because it happened to be on somebody's phone. And how much of Sturgis is it news because it's news? And I don't know what that kind of question that is, but what if you and I, what if you guys are the, what if you went and did a NASCAR race in Texas and all of a sudden that became viral? That would be the news, even though there's probably 100 of them every Friday night. I mean, how much of it is momentum?
Well, you know, there's no question that newsrooms have cut back on their staff and they rely on, like, AP, Associated Press, for reports, and then they repackage a lot of the news. But, you know, there's also some editorial decision-making there in what people consider to be news. You know, I mean, if, you know, you're not going to see an MSNBC and CNN today, you're not going to see that photograph of 30 Chicago cops turning their back on the way lights it, because that's not news on those channels. But you'll probably see it on Fox, and you'll probably see it on local news, because that is news on those channels. So there's a lot of editorial decision-making there that, you know, reflect political biases that then determine what people think is news.
So,
you know, I tell you right now, I think the odds of seeing that photograph that we've seen of the 30 cops in the police station, you know, or in the hospital turning their back on the mayor when he approached them, that photograph's not going to be on CNN extensively. It's not going to be on MSNBC. You're going to see a lot of it on Fox.
But how much of it, Jeff? How can I put
this? You're going to see the Sturgis rally a lot on MSNBC, and you're not going to see it on Fox, right?
But
so I think it's more about the political ideology and the agenda that perhaps might dominate some of the newsrooms as opposed to what is actually news.
I'm trying to formulate this right. So bear with me a second. What I'm trying to get to, Jeff and Maddie, is we just did it. We filled up three, maybe more because I'm still talking about it, 3-4 minutes of this show talking about Sturgis. And the reason why we did it is because somebody else talked about Sturgis, and they did it because somebody before them talked about Sturgis, because someplace, somewhere, somebody popped this one out there and actually maybe did the work. And went out there and took the pictures and interviewed somebody and said, nah, we're not requiring those friggin' masks. Right? And so somebody, and now everybody else uses it as it content. Is it because we don't have the personnel to start a new story and go down and actually interview somebody at a NASCAR track and start something of our own? Because in a sense, we just piled on too.
But because it's a story, because it is news. 100,000 people are showing up at a place that's not where they lived, on motorcycles. It's a story.
Hopefully not sleeping on a motorcycle. That wouldn't be comfortable.
100,000 people showed up in Grand Park, you know. That's a story.
But somehow, the fact that they...
And it's not a story because someone else said it is. It's because it's a story. It's newsworthy.
Well, and why, if it's now a week later, if there's no spike in COVID from Grand Park, why isn't that a story? Because people just want everybody to keep being afraid, or what? I mean, the Notre Dame thing was a story. When the people
that goes back to my explanation. Yeah. You know, is the political agenda or ideology of whatever the platform is. I think that's an awesome story, but we're not going to hear about it. You know, listen, they did it. I went and looked at it. You can look this story up. That's what amazes me, that they keep on doing this stuff, because Sturgis rally occurred last year during COVID. And then you went back and you look afterwards as to what actually occurred, and they did skip tracing. Believe me, every progressive ideological, you know, reporter out there was trying to trace Sturgis to be a super spreader event. It just didn't happen. So if you go back and search that last year's Sturgis rally, and what the resulting cases of COVID were, it was a fraction that was no different than what the national averages and local averages were at that time. Even with the skip tracing, and believe me, everybody was on that story, trying to prove it to be. In fact, the whole word super spreader event should really be stricken. It's like It's like, I don't allow people to use the word science anymore because typically they're idiots who don't know anything about science. And the word super spreader event should be stricken as well. It's usually used by idiots who don't, you know, who have no evidence of something being a super spreader event.
Well, the, I think, Jeff,
but the Sturgis rally last year was not a super spreader event.
No, but, I think,
That's the reality.
In fact,
the CDC said that you'll be hard pressed to find any case. The BLM riots were not super spreader events.
Remember the
Hill riot was not a super spreader event. You'd be hard pressed to find any super spreader event.
I can name a few.
The 13 Democratic senators who got on a private plane to leave Texas, the 33 senators, of which 13 became COVID infected, that was a super spreader event. They were on a small plane without masks, and they managed to all, get COVID.
I'm going to say, Jeff, on a small plane for that length of time, the mask would have made no difference.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, I'm sure that's the case.
How many people were disappointed with the Notre Dame team when everybody rushed the field last year when they won some game or something? And everybody was convinced that was going to be, and it wasn't. But there are super, speaking of which, I'm going to ask you a medical question, even though you're not Dr. Jeff. Why do you suppose in this particular disease there are individuals that are super spreaders? I read something from, I'm using the word science, but it was a scientific article that people wrote from a lot of research in South Korea and Vietnam. And they came to the conclusion that out of all the people that had COVID, only like 20% of the people infected 80% of the rest of the people. That 60-some percent of people didn't infect anybody. That you're spreading. That some people actually are super spreaders. The securities company had the big seminar in Boston when this all started. That they claim ended up infecting like 100,000 people. Like one guy there who came from Europe, he infected what 100 and some people at the event. And some people actually have.
Well,
why do you suppose that is? I mean, on a scientific scale, why some people barely spread it, and other people are like, Typhoid Mary.
I think that can find its roots in the Pareto principle. The Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule. 20% of people are overachievers, right?
I overachieve. I infected more kids in the neighborhood with measles than the next guy. But I'm a measles overachiever. What do you make of? I'll ask you real quick. We got to talk. We got a couple minutes. What's your read from the outside? You're from the inside in a bunch of different places. What do you think happens when the Fed gets browbeaten into changing this policy and they actually start pulling some money out?
We'll see. We've had the Fed on one solid course for a long, long, long time. He's just doing the same thing for a long time. And quite frankly, I think at this point, any reversal of Fed policy is going to have some kind of shock to the system because they've been doing the same thing for such a long time, which is essentially nothing other than dumping money in, right? To start reversing that flow is, I think it's going to be a real shock to the system.
What do you make of, I haven't looked lately, but usually when markets are on their highs, that the margin loans are usually kind of on their highs, so I have not looked, so don't take that as a gospel this time. But it surely was in 87 and 29 and other times. One of the things we haven't talked about, because it's pretty technical, and I don't want to go down that road, but I'm going to do just a real Cliff Notes version, is in our system, individual people and banks can essentially create money, right, Jeff? And one of the ways you do it is borrowing money from somebody else and putting it back in the bank. Well, now both of you have a bank account now where only one had before, so you've essentially created money. You've created a demand deposit. Well, you do sort of the same thing in the securities industry. I mean, if you buy a stock at 100 and it runs at 200 and you borrow against it and run out and buy some other stock, you've essentially created that cash, right? Because now but if all of a sudden it kind of goes the other way, it can cause a contraction in not only the market, but in a supply of money dramatically. So if you lose, $2 trillion in stock value, probably a good chunk of that was borrowed, right? So that ends up constricting your money supply dramatically. I mean, these guys have been doing this for so long, Jeff.
Yeah, and then on top of that, what you just made reference to is, you know, the sale of about $1 trillion of reverse repos, right?
Yeah.
That the banking system was holding, you know, reducing those reserves, you know, and induce banks to reduce lending. So yeah, you get constricted economic activity as a result of all that. Back to the earlier statement, you know, that's just the obvious economic chain of events, right? But I think it'll be a much bigger shock. You know, when you have the Fed pumping money into the system for so many years and the market, you know, absorbing that and becoming used to it, I think these reverse repos, I think it's going to be a real shock to the system.
Well,
I think the Biden administration is in for a tough road ahead with, you know, the prospect of this uncertain job market as to where it's really going and this shadow inflation, the real inflation. Let's see the CPI numbers today, isn't it? Is that right or
no? I think it's tomorrow and Thursday, but...
It's this week.
Well, Jeff, we'll definitely talk about it next week. They get another hot number, they're going to have to do something. I mean, it's crazed. Anyway, thank you very much, buddy. Good stuff as usual. And we'll tweet out the luck box as we always do. And I'll be seeing you tomorrow. That should be fun.
You got it.
All right, buddy.
Oh, that's right. I'll see you tomorrow. Looking forward to it.
Should we bring Maddie? Oh, he's got to play
softball.
No, he's got to play softball. So he's got to go play softball. SPP is up 75 cents. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.